Masters Universe. My name is Doug Kelly. I'm here with Grant Rubendunst. Hey, Grant.
Hey, Doug. Welcome, everybody.
And we have to, of course, wish Grant happy birthday. Today's his birthday. You're 39th, right?
29, 59 and holding.
That's right. I guess when you get up in up at this point in our lives, you have to kick it up from 29 to 59. Is that what happens?
Absolutely. Yeah, no doubt about it.
Well, good. It's a good day.
Yeah, it's always a good day. Every day above ground at my age is wonderful. But, but thank you very much.
Yeah. Well, okay, so we welcome everybody in the chat room listening to live broadcast tonight, as well as those in the Inception Radio Network chat room. And we also welcome those listening to the archive. Glad you could join us. Tonight we have with us Jerry Pippin, a longtime broadcaster and UFO enthusiast and all that stuff. And tonight we're going to be talking about the UFO field a little bit. Jerry, welcome to the program. So good to have you.
Well, it's good to be here, and happy birthday.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
And you're pretty close to Uncle Sam there.
Yeah.
Not in age, but in at least the calendar.
Yep,
and
absolutely.
The date.
Yep. Yeah, this is.
So, I mean, I my birthday is close to Thanksgiving, and occasionally it's on Thanksgiving. And you're pretty close to the 4th of July every year, so.
Yeah, my folks.
I guess when you were growing up, they gave you some firecrackers, and that was it?
Well, they used to say they were shooting them off at me, but no. Seriously, it was a lot of fun. It was a real. 4th of July was always my favorite holiday next to Christmas as a kid, so I was always thrilled. It was a good time for me. Well, I'm not so sure, but.
So Jerry, you've been broadcasting nearly 5 decades or about.
Yeah, a little over actually.
Yeah, a little over, okay.
Yeah.
And of course, you.
I think my first broadcast was I was in sophomore, first paid broadcast in high school. Worked weekends at the radio station. They got tired of me being a groupie, so they let me work on Sunday.
Yeah, that's good. Good way to get into it. So you host your own weekly show. Do you have more than one show or just one show a week?
I have, we have kind of an interesting dynamic that we've been doing since 2003 in that it's not really a weekly show, even though we do a weekly show. And we're on Inception Radio Network, as a matter of fact, every Monday night. And we syndicate a few shows around to other places as well. But basically, when we started on the internet in 2000, actually 1999, and we were at a station that was streaming in 2000. And at 2003, that station was sold and they changed formats. And so we just kept on going, and instead of streaming, we embraced the podcast, the MP3 and the WMA. And so we put both shows out, or all of our shows, really, in both of those formats, and we basically make them available on demand. And so we do probably 3 to 5 new hours a week, and sometimes more. And sometimes maybe one or two less, but usually we try to, originally we tried to change content every day.
Yes.
And we still strive for that, but it's a very complicated and difficult way to do things,
so
you don't always make it.
You've been interested in UFOs, obviously, for some time. Has that been a lifelong thing as well?
Well, I've been interested in UFOs when I was growing up. Besides wanting to be a radio announcer and wanting to go to Hollywood and be an actor, and I tried both. I wrote a little science fiction here and there back there in the days of Pulp Fiction in the late 50s. And I was always entranced with the idea, as far as I can remember, from listening to science fiction programs for kids, like Space Patrol and things like that, and Space Cadet, Tom Corbett's Space Cadet. And I have always been a personality on the radio, and not always just doing talk shows, but an element of my shows has always been listener kibitzing or calling in, and we always looked for the unusual and the paranormal, and UFOs both interested us and is interested the audience, gets a big audience. And so we've been studying it and relating it and reporting it. I think probably the first UFO show I did, actually I did some ghost shows before I did UFOs, was probably 67, 68,
wow,
something like that.
So you're obviously into the field at this point, and you've interviewed quite a few people. And you obviously have some thoughts on the state of the UFO field, and that's what we want to focus on tonight. There was apparently some different things going on. I mean, there's been some different things going on in the field, and as well as probably the entire anomalous research field in different ways. What's your take on it?
Well, I have several levels of thinking about it.
We'll start
and
at level
part of it is I originally did more show business type interviews. In fact, I went to Las Vegas in '87 and started doing celebrity interviews for a radio station out there. And Billy Goodman followed me doing UFO shows and unusual things. Even had somebody calling in claiming they were Elvis.
Uh-huh.
And I've always been interested in it and followed and known these people. And I have some impressions. The first impression is I'm amazed at the amount of static that these people give each other over their ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, in many ways, more contentious. And it's like walking in a minefield, more to do interviews with the UFO researchers and even to the paranormal researchers to a certain extent, because they evidently deeply believe in what they're saying and they put out. There are also a few con men around as well, so don't misunderstand me. I'm not that naive. But I always thought show business people were tough to deal with. But they're not nearly as difficult to deal with as UFO people.
See, that's interesting that you say that. And I don't know, maybe you're more into the UFO field than you are into the haunting side of things. But it's been, I guess my opinion has been almost the opposite, where you get a ton of the petty stuff and the fighting and the bickering and all that in the haunting side, whereas you get less of it in the UFO side. I mean,
that may indeed be true.
Well, and of course, what you're saying could be true. In my opinion, you know, the UFO side of the field has had less of the, the fighting and petty crap that goes on. And, you know, it's always been my opinion that the UFO side of the field, well, it's more academic. There are more academic type folks involved.
Let me make this statement. One of the surprises I had in the UFOs as I started going to UFO conventions and meetings and getting to know the people I interviewed and getting acquainted with the field overall is I was amazed at how many intellectuals, people with PhDs, are in this field.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's also some in the paranormal field as well. And I didn't mean to give the impression that, all the UFO people were petty and egomaniacs, and the paranormal people weren't. I think
they all are.
Yeah, well, what I'm trying to say in broadcasting, except for you two guys, of course,
right,
and Jamie Havicon, who produces the show, we're all egomaniacs too, but or we wouldn't be doing this business now, would we, if we didn't have some sort of ego?
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, we obviously have some sort of embellishment of our ability to get out there and be worthy of people listening.
I don't know who the hell around here is embellishing. I mean, we're just damn good.
I think you bring up a good point, and I think that it doesn't matter which side that you're on, whether you're in the UFO or the paranormal field. People cling to their belief systems. I think what we've encountered with some of the paranormal folks is a real rigidity around certain issues, and that's not to say that doesn't happen with the UFO folks, you know. But I think one of the differences is, and I see it, and either you guys are free to disagree with me or agree.
I disagree.
Beautiful. But the point is that I think the UFO field has been targeted more than any other for disinformation.
Oh yeah, it has.
That was one of the things I was going to bring up. Was that in addition to all of the things we talked about, the UFO people have an organized resistance and interjection of disorganization by outside forces that behooves them to keep it stirred up, the pot of emotion. If you want to keep something a secret, just follow any secret black ops manual, and you'll see the best way to handle it is to stir the pot emotionally, keep people at each other's throats, even putting out falsehoods about people, knowing that they'll trace it back to somebody else, people planning things that the other people are saying. I've had some of that happen to me. I've been pretty lucky compared to many broadcasters. Is that I think overall I have a fairly good reputation, but it's very, very difficult to maneuver the choppy seas of disinformation and downright efforts to discredit everybody and everything.
And you know, the kernel, what really I think it gets people befuddled a lot is the fact that I think with all disinformation, there's a small kernel of truth. And it's really difficult to separate the wheat from the chaff. And so I think one of the things that they do is with the disinformation is lead us on a very convoluted trail that they hope will get us to chase our tails. So,
and there is a little 10-minute piece on YouTube, and we've used it before on our shows. John Lear years ago was talking to Art Bell. And basically the setup was, and I think you can enter John Lear, and it'll probably come up on YouTube. The setup was, what if Art Bell was called to Washington, D.C., and they told him that he could, do the job of telling the truth? And then, of course, Lear lays out all of the stories that have been going on since the 30s. Some of them I agree with, some I don't, some there's not enough proof, but and when I say I agree with things, a lot of people get pretty upset if they don't agree with something that they hear about, and I don't think that's my job. My job is just to ask basically questions about it. But anyway, I would recommend people going over there and listening to that. I'm not in business of plugging Art, even though he's retired now, and I used to be on Against Him, as a matter of fact, in Las Vegas on a different station. But the point is that there have been wild stories about UFOs that you know couldn't be true. And the best example of that is this book on Area 51 by Annie Jacobson. Annie's a good reporter and does a lot of work and has been on everybody's show and their brothers. And much of what she says is true. But what she says about Roswell is far out. And basically, have you guys heard what she says?
No, go ahead.
Okay, basically
she's
saying... I'm
familiar a little bit with what she's saying. And, you know, to me, and I know you'll probably agree with me, you know, here's the thing, and I don't want to steal anybody's thunder, but I think that the media rushes to people that endorse that ridiculous, you know, the whole idea of Roswell is ridiculous, and I think that's what her book did.
Well, yeah, it is, but nobody's even really doing very clear thinking on it. This story she's talking about is Joseph Mengele, the angel of death. Joseph Stalin found out about him. They made contact, and Stalin basically had noticed that the American people were easy to panic, and basically they took some teenage mutants that Mengele had done, put them in a craft that the Nazis had developed. It only had 1,000 miles at the most to fly, but it went all the way from someplace in Russia down to Roswell. They taught these teenage mutants how to do it, and they taught them, you know, and they got them to fly into a thunderstorm, and they knew a thunderstorm was going to happen late night, July 4th. I mean, all of that is incredible.
Yeah,
but we heard that same story 4 years ago, and it was Japanese prisoners of war.
Yep.
That we were experimenting with. And we, you know, in other words, anything, regardless of how horrible it is, seems to be okay, other than admitting that there might be extraterrestrials from other places. And Lear, as I talked about earlier, thinks there's 18 different species. I know there's a guy named Clifford Stone, retired Army sergeant, that lives in Roswell. He thinks there's 53 or 54 different species.
Right.
I've heard 120-ish.
Yeah, I mean, there could be all of those. It is pretty logical that there just wouldn't be one group out there. And so, you know, and then we get into the UFO, and the same thing you have happened with you guys in the paranormal is you get a natural resistance from religious entities.
Yes, this is true.
Oh, yeah.
And they basically are closed-minded because they're already believing a certain theory or hypothesis and on faith alone without any evidence.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not really willing to listen to another story about what could have happened, which also, unfortunately, doesn't have a lot of evidence. However, there's more and more evidence being put together by competent researchers every day.
Well, you know, the thing that's really disturbing is the fact that here we are, you know, 50 years out from Roswell, and, you know...
And we're 64 getting ready for
65.
Right.
Yes, this is true. Sorry about that. My math, I was never a whiz of math. But the bottom
that's
line
okay.
is that, you know what, things are murkier now than they ever have been, and the media... Why the media is serving their masters well, because there have been incredible cases that and cases that have a lot of merit that they've completely ignored or made anybody who's associated with the sighting or the incident look like an idiot.
And I have some thoughts about that on how that happens and why it happens. If you want me to get into that, I'll be glad to.
Let me ask you one quick question from the chat room, and then we'll get into that. The question is, do you think that Area 51 is being used as a decoy base, and Dulce is the main UFO base now?
I'm not sure that Dulce is a main base, but I think a lot more has happened in New Mexico than we give credit for.
Okay.
And I think that, you know, Los Alamos, the home of the Manhattan Project, I mean, it just came home over the 4th of July with that big fire they had out there when they had to evacuate the town, that they didn't know what to do with the radiation from those barrels even back there in the 40s when they were developing the atomic bomb. So what they do, they put them in barrels and use the kick and bump way to get rid of them, and that is back up a pickup truck to a ravine. And if you've ever been to Los Alamos, you know it's on a bunch of mesas, not just one. And there's deep canyons, and some of those canyons have radioactive material that have been there forever. And Annie Jacobson, we laugh and scoff about her Roswell theory, I think she's probably right on about, and I'm not trying to pick and choose. And the reason I'll tell you why I believe her in a minute, but I think she's right on about the half-life of plutonium and Area 28, for instance, and Area 13, right next to Area 52. And some of the plutonium has a half-life of 24,000 miles, I mean years. And so and I think this story came to her at the end to kind of discredit her somewhat about, because she had done too good of a job in finding some of the secrets about Area 51. Now, you got to understand that she and most of these reporters that get national press, mainstream media, are really members of the establishment in their thinking, if not technically taking marching orders.
Uh-huh.
And basically, I've been on major stations, and I at one time we syndicated on 189 different stations, and some major stations like KLIF in Dallas and KHOW in Denver and Los Angeles and Phoenix KFYI, and I could go on. I don't want to leave everybody out, but major markets. And one reason I stopped doing that was because basically you had 189 different bosses. Each of these program directors, to them, their radio station was the most important.
Of course.
We still syndicate a little bit, but on certain projects. But the point is that the media has changed so much that now some of our shows, over a period of time, I'm not going to say we get that audience overnight, but since we do all of our shows on demand and they're around for a long time, and we promote, because the internet's like a haystack, and your program's a needle inside that haystack, and you gotta let people know where it is. A lot of people like to find it, but if for some reason Google doesn't pick it up, and they don't pick up a lot, contrary to what everybody likes to think, you get lost. So we ended up, I'd say by 2008 or 2009, all of a sudden some of our audiences on certain shows with hot topics were rivaling what we had on conventional radio. And so we're talking normally. You're looking at 100, 1,000 people on a stream, some maybe a little more, but we're talking about an aggregate total of. By now, I've done probably 1,000 shows, and you add those all up, you've got a good number, and that's the reason we do it. And we have 3 websites to hold all our content.
So,
and, if I could mention those, that'd be good.
Yeah, please, go ahead.
Please, go ahead.
iPodShows.net was designed originally when the internet started pushing podcasts and digital downloads and things like that. So we put most of our general shows on over there. By that, I just don't do UFO and paranormal shows. I still do some celebrity interviews. I still do political shows. I still do my mainstay is really conspiracy shows, because contrary to all the laughing of everybody in the world, conspiracies happen every day by governments, by corporations, and by people.
Right.
Well, you know, anybody who doubts that there's ever been political conspiracies, all they have to do is crack a history book.
That's right.
Political intrigue started in the cave. And, I mean, if you want to look at political intrigue, look at the Roman Empire.
True. And so we have that one. Then we have UFOShowsToGo.com, which is also a podcast design site. We put the most current shows up there on the front page. And we have little graphics and try to get people to see them. And everything we do ends up at jerrypippin.com, either is actually posted there or basically a link pointing to somewhere where it is. Like we have a link right now on our highlights window on our homepage, jerrypippin.com, pointing to the show.
Cool.
And then it'll go to the archives right after that.
So what are you? What was that you wanted to get into just a moment ago before we got into Dulce?
As far as the media, they don't. I don't think any of these reporters get a call from. Occasionally, they do get a call from the president or a general or somebody and say, "I don't think you need to report that story." And they call upon their patriotism. But
sure.
That's not usually the way they're controlled, and it's happened to me many times. They call you in to the office, and they say, "Jerry, you're doing a great job. My God, this story you're getting ready to do on uranium-235 laying out here by the Arkansas River, do you really want to do that? I mean, that's right by some casinos that advertise with us. Can't you go find another story? Can't you find something that'll do a little better? You can go ahead and mention it and whatever you feel like, and I'm certainly not trying to impose upon your ability and your creativity, but let's use a little common sense here. Don't bite the hand to feed you, man. And so, and I'm a big proponent of free broadcasting, commercial supported, and it's more difficult than ever now due to a bad economy plus the idea that nobody has a huge audience anymore like they used to.
Right.
At one time, when I was talking about back there in radio in high school, the station I worked for had 50% of the audience.
Wow.
Can you imagine that somebody?
Yeah, that's
then nobody. If you got 13% now, you got a huge audience. And that explains, in a nutshell, the philosophy behind the popularity of conservative talk radio. Is it's pretty easy to get 13% of the audience to listen because they want to hear what you're saying. And so here we go back to UFOs and paranormal shows. The reason there's so many of those on the Internet and on regular radio is because they get good audiences.
Mm-hmm.
They have a built-in interest.
Well,
everybody's used, I mean, just the makeup of the human brain makes it pretty easy for you to pursue either a religious topic or a paranormal spiritual topic of life after death or another life or a parallel universe or reality-based content that might be going on at the same time that your reality is going on.
That's so true. Here's a question from the chat room. What do you make of us stopping the U.S. manned flight program?
Well, the same thing I make of, we went to the moon, we stopped.
Why?
I don't have the answer why, other than money. But why, now that here's one of the big UFO stories that's running around, and that is an sort of a Gary McKinnon when he broke into the NASA computers. Basically, that there's this space navy out there that we've been operating, and it's a secret space navy. And if that is true, then everybody at NASA and everybody at the Pentagon and everybody at the United States government political angles and everybody in the White House, they're guilty of committing manslaughter, aren't they? Sending people up to die and dangerous things when we've got some other alternative energy to do it.
Is that what they're using, or allegedly?
Yes. I mean, you know, supposedly they're, and we have people come on and talk about it and some evidence to prove. For instance, Lockheed at one time supposedly had developed, and there's a well-known aviation writer who says that they have planes now that they developed probably in the 70s. That will go from Los Angeles to Chicago in 17 minutes.
Wow.
And now there's a big thing going now on Open Minds TV, Michael Sherratt, who's the author I'm talking about and has done a lot of evidence in it, an intelligent fellow. He's revealing all kinds of new secret planes, and so did Annie Jacobson when she talked about Area 51. And I know for a fact when I was broadcasting back in Las Vegas there, and I would do an occasional UFO show, and Billy Goodman after me was doing them every night, People would call in all the time seeing things up around where Area 51 and near Las Vegas and over into California. And a lot of what they were seeing were, you know, the B-1 and B-2 bombers and stealth fighters and things like that.
Right.
So you have that mixture in the UFO business, too. There's some secret operations going on, and we're seeing some of those. And I know for a fact that many people in, let's say, the Defense Intelligence Agency, even the Central Intelligence Agency, they like to spread rumors and encourage UFOs.
Right.
I know a lot of them have gone to conventions to stay up to speed on it. And why do they like to spread UFO stories? Because it covers what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
It gives them a cover story.
Jerry, in all the years that you've been doing this and all the people that you've interviewed, you have any intriguing stories? Have you ever been contacted by insiders or whistleblowers that you thought were legitimate? And out of that, which story, if you've got one, was the most intriguing?
Well, I have. It's hard to pinpoint exactly one story, but basically, yes, most of these people that tell us things, they're whistleblowers that were sent to do it.
Mm.
In other words...
Right, but did you ever have anybody that you thought was really legit?
Oh, yeah. We probably spend 25% of our time chasing stories that turn out to not be true, and the person is a complete fluke.
25%?
Yeah, 25% of the time. Now, that's not saying I put 25% on the air, but I may put even more than that, because what I do is I present a guest and a story, the best with the most information I have at the time. And the interesting story you ask about that probably would be the Pickering brothers and this story about a UFO invasion coming in 2017. And that there were three different types of the ETs, and they were in contact with the federal government, and they were they laid it all out, and they had a basic you always have a source that's supposedly a high up a military officer. This particular source supposedly was a Navy captain. It turned out he was not quite a captain, but he was the equivalent of a lieutenant colonel, or maybe even a colonel by the end of it. And then the other guy they were quoting never actually served in the service at all. And that story basically was that he was out at China Lake, which is just adjacent to Area 51, and he was in the Marine Corps. And he was out looking for a lost missile that they had been testing. And this UFO comes flying over and makes contact with him. And before he knows it, these black ops from the U.S. military, a mixture of private soldiers and also Navy and Army and Air Force, literally captured him, took him to Area 51, did brainwashing on him, and all of that. And basically, they then incorporated him into their secrecy. And it was a good story. A lot of the facts were very close to what would check out. And at the time, we had the producer, Leslie Mitz, who just loved that story. She wanted to believe in it with all her heart. I ended up doing a two-part episode on it, three parts, I think, complete with sound effects, a lot of film clips, a lot of interviews, a lot of different people. And basically, I never felt comfortable with it and tried to keep my distance as far as presenting the show. But we presented it, and pretty much a couple of other people that make a living on the Internet discounting and proving everybody's a liar had started in on them, and they came up with some substantial evidence that we had to admit it was false. And but we never really endorse our shows as saying, if we do, if I ever get on the air and say, I believe this, I literally say it that way.
Right.
There's no you know, I present radio, and my belief, especially if you do interviews, is you're supposed to follow up what these people are saying. It's a human business. It's a
right.
It's a story of each person and their beliefs, and why they believe that. I'm not a complete softball guy as far as asking easy questions, but I do a few. But we're getting ready to do another series of shows on the Mutual UFO Network, in which there's all kinds of things going on there. And basically, Clifford Cliff, the international director, is coming back home with me because he danced around the truth with me last time.
Mm.
And it pissed me off. And I told him so. And Chase McCloskey, head of the STAR team, who's now a broadcaster, is going to come on with me as well and tell why all of a sudden she quit and why she lost faith in everybody. And we're going to have Elaine Douglas is out there with the committee to improve or reform MUFON, I think is the exact title. And basically what they want, which seems natural to me, they want the membership to be able to vote on the board of directors.
Hmm.
And right now, at MUFON, the board of directors select other board of directors.
Well, you know, for years, I know that you've
yeah, I mean, no, it's always been that way.
Yeah, but for years, they've all the rumor has, or you know, what's circulated is MUFON's in the pocket. They've been the mouthpiece for a lot of disinformation.
And well, yeah, and I've heard those rumors and talked to several of their people over the years about it, and there may well be some truth to that, and there may well, but it's hard to prove that. And at the same time, if you were an organization like the Mutual UFO Network and you were getting close to the real stories, and people, your members, were actually out there doing your job and started reporting things, How would you combat that if you were, say, somebody at the CIA or MJ-12 or whomever we have at this point that's managing all of the UFO stories and UFO disclosure, if there is such a thing going on? How would you manage it other than to discount the messenger?
Well, I think you're right, and I think that what, you know, people were essentially powerless in the face of, when you talked about conspiracies, about people who have more power. If they have power over the media, if they have power to persuade, you know, or, you know, to basically threaten you in a kind of a manner, then, you know what, the message is going to get innocuous. It's going to have to be innocuous, or people are going to back off. And it wouldn't surprise me any at all if somebody's pulled some of these folks aside and said, you know, like what happened to you, Jerry? You know, only they may have been a little bit more pointed.
Now, I've never been threatened over a UFO story. I have been threatened. I've been shot at. A lot of things have happened to me over the years. But mainly it's been over conspiracies and government cover-ups. And some of the real dastardly things that we have done in the name of God, Mother, and Country.
Uh-huh. So let's get back to the MUFON thing. So do you feel that these different things that are going on with MUFON are an attempt by the powers that be to disrupt the organization?
Well, James Carrion, the former international director, said there was a mole within. And if there is a mole within, I know her name, and I know where she's from, Idaho, and I know how she got on the board, and I know what she's doing, and they're getting ready to change international directors. It's not been officially announced yet.
Really?
And probably
at
a convention they're having in California later this month. Clifford may have to confess to it next Monday on our Inception Radio broadcast. We'll see. I like Clifford Cliff a lot, but I like a lot of these people a lot. Does that mean they're telling me the truth? No. And so am I going to let them get away with lying to me? Not if I can help it. And there's a dangerous thing going on with MUFON. It's going on with a lot of organizations, and that's this thing that you got to sign statements, even broadcasting's full of it. You got to sign statements that you can't tell anybody anything about certain information about how your operation works or whatever. And that's BS. I've never signed. Clear Channel fired me over that. I've stayed with them longer than that, and it's the only time I've ever been fired. And that's because I wouldn't sign an exclusivity with them. I just don't believe in that.
So you're saying that back...
I'm saying that the star team that MUFON has, they have a non-disclosure pact. Now, Clifford told me it was, pardon the word, bullshit, but it's not. It's right there on the paper.
That,
and the reason they're doing it, I don't think, is because of the government.
Are you talking about exclusivity, or are you talking about confidentiality?
Confidentiality.
And
exclusivity. And I'm talking about once you investigate something for MUFON, then it's supposedly theirs. Well, this is an organization made up of volunteers. Nobody owns it. It's a nonprofit organization. And for anybody to claim proprietary rights to anything in one of these type of organizations is wrong, in my opinion.
Are you talking about with respect to the information that they get on a case?
Yes.
And so let me ask you this. Suppose that the STAR team or any team is actively investigating a particular case. Wouldn't you want confidentiality until that case had been completed?
Why?
I don't know.
The police department always says
why?
Aren't you in the mission of MUFON and the mission of a police department and the mission of a justice department and the mission of the military and the mission of the State Department is for the public good? And are you telling me that the public is not capable of understanding the information?
Well, no.
And
I'm
the
not.
Mission of MUFON is to do scientific investigations.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I've had this battle with police departments and the FBI all my life. They like secrets because they want to cover up their own butts, and most of them are incompetent, and most of them never get to the right end of a case.
I can't wait.
And they need somebody to ask real questions. And when reporters say, "Well, I'm not going to report that because that's got to be confidential," why? We're not in a war with any nation. The terrorists have no army, they have no navy, they have no air force, they have no government.
Well, it's certainly a way to shut people up and control. And I'm sure you'll agree with me right now. You know, fear equals control. All you have to do is get people all riled up, thinking that you know that they're going to be attacked.
And they've been successful at doing that.
Absolutely, absolutely. And all you got to do is look around. Look.
I want to ask you something.
Sure.
We talked about Roswell earlier.
Mm-hmm.
It happened in 1947 on July 4th, 11:45 in the evening. And this is 2011. And that's 64 years. What the hell could be worth a secret 64 years?
Well, it's obviously if it was
what?
Extraterrestrials and they still want to keep that covered up, that would
what
be
is
the
it?
Answer.
What is it that you're saying they want to cover up?
Extraterrestrials.
I mean, why would they want to keep that a secret?
Well, there's a lot of theories as to why. You know them as well as anyone.
Yeah, but I mean, those don't hold water.
Oh,
the religious theory alone, within 2 weeks, just the Vatican recently said
I know.
They could save those souls too.
Well, and see that.
And any evangelist would be sought would adjust to that.
That was a brilliant.
Well, you know, I think we can go back to maybe their mindset has to do with like some of the reports that came out in the 60s, like, you know, the Brookings report. And the Brookings report essentially said that, you know, any time that a civilization has encountered another civilization that has a higher level of technology, the consequences have been disastrous. Now, whether or not that's a ruse or not, I don't know. But
I don't think that's true.
Oh, I don't necessarily.
And I don't think the Brookings Institute knows beans.
Mm-hmm. Well,
and
they've made
an unbelievable lot of money off of the government, off of the taxpayers, for 60 years being a think tank. And most of the people at the Brookings Institute I know don't think.
Yeah, well, I'm inclined to agree with you. You know, I have no doubt about that because, first of all, we can only judge that from a human standpoint.
Let me tell you something I've noticed, and I've met lots of secret agents. I've met lots of government people. I've met lots of captains of industry. And the most amazing common denominator is most of these people have risen one or two levels above their worthiness. In other words, everybody's been promoted right out
Peter
of their capabilities. It's the old Peter principle.
Yeah.
You take a great salesman who can handle people, and you make him a sales manager, and he probably can't deal worth a damn with other people that are selling for him. And this happens all the time. It happens in every kind of society you have, whether it's a fascist, socialist, communist, or capitalist.
All right. Let's go back and clarify one point, though, that we left hanging on confidentiality and MUFON and other organizations, including Paranexus. And I just want to set it straight for the record. In terms of confidentiality, I agree that people have a right to know. The issue that arises with an organization making things public is in the manner of making it public prior to the completion of an investigation.
I disagree. That's just control.
No, it's not. Let me explain.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I disagree.
Are you interested in hearing my position?
I'm interested only in one thing, and that's reporting the truth.
Okay, well, so am I. And it would honor me greatly if you'd hear me out. And this is why. If we are actively, and we have been, investigating a particular case, it's one thing to state this is what happened, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's the truth. The danger that arises is in spinning that, is in offering conclusions before a case is concluded.
See, I didn't ask anybody to offer a conclusion.
I understand.
I'm asking for people not to say anything about something. I don't agree with them. My job is to always find it out.
Okay, well, Jerry,
I'm always going to find it out. If it's a top secret thing and America is on the brink of being destroyed if I release the information, of course I wouldn't.
You know, the interesting
thing,
Jerry,
that doesn't happen anymore.
You know, you and I agree on this particular point. What I'm trying to do for the benefit of my listeners and not so much you is, we already agree, but I'm not sure you know that yet. But what I'm trying to point out here is that perhaps, and I don't know this, but I'm trying to give MUFON the benefit of the doubt a little bit too, is it's the problem arises when an organization spends it or draws conclusions in disseminating that case information. So that could be one of the reasons why they're not.
I'm sure it is the reason.
Okay, so
I'm 100% sure it is. I'm sure probably that those people that made that rule and put that in that contract, I'm not sure that they are doing it for any other reason than they want a reasonable outcome.
Well,
but I'm saying, just like they like to do criminal background checks on investigators.
Right.
I'm saying that's BS.
Really?
Because a criminal can find out just as much information for you about UFOs as a guy that goes to Sunday school three times a day.
There is a huge there's a huge issue with that, though.
What is the issue?
The issue is if you put a
I take crooks, murderers, word all the time. That's how I get stories.
Yes, but you're in a different business. if we put criminals in people's homes doing investigations, that's a problem. Period.
Well, you're not going to be putting – not everybody – the background check doesn't prevent having a criminal.
Well, that's true.
Do we have a society where anybody that's charged with something, and we have evidence that over 50% of the people in prison, in my opinion, and I've been in prison undercover, are there because they fell against the system and they're probably not even guilty and – the justice system, those with money can beat it. Others can't.
Our prisons are filled with first-time drug offenders mostly.
And so what's the best way to discount somebody is you spread the word they're a child molester.
Uh-huh.
Now, how in the hell are you going to say I'm not a child molester? I mean, who's going to believe you?
Well, if you are, then you will have been dealt with by the courts. And if it's been
my point is that's not true. Most the courts never get close to the real crooks. Most police never arrest the right people. I've been there in the criminal justice system covering it for 50 years. I'm telling you, we do not have the finest system. I don't know that there's a finest system.
No, we don't have to look any farther than that.
You've got basically people with their own agendas. And
yeah,
the easiest
and I think
thing to do
well
is
taken,
just,
Jerry, because we don't have to look any farther than the recent verdict in the case of the Anthony case. You know.
Well, so, how can we say that jury verdict was wrong? How could
right.
we say OJ's verdict was wrong? We didn't sit
well,
there and
I
listen
think the
to
DNA
it every day. I understand what you're saying. All I'm saying is we're jumping to conclusions all the time. That if something doesn't go the way we're told by the press, all we know about this case is what was reported in the press. And the press, I've been around police reporters. I know how you do it. You become buddy-buddy with the sergeant and the lieutenant and the chief investigator, and you go have a few drinks, and you wait for them to hand you a little crumb, and you report it.
Mm-hmm.
You play ball with them.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a reason why district attorneys have 90-some-odd% success rates is because it's not because they're arresting the right people. It's because there's no way to beat that system.
All right, let's get it back. We got about 6 minutes left to go. And let's get your concluding thoughts on the state of the UFO field. Where's it going, do you think?
Well, I don't think it's going anywhere. I think it's going to be basically the same way it's been.
What do you think?
Let me give you why a scenario and why I say this. If tomorrow morning at 8:30, a flying saucer landed at the White House lawn, and the cameras were there, and there'd probably be just a group feed, one or two networks would feed everybody. They get out of the saucer, they go into the White House, they come back and fly away at 10:45. Obama comes on the air at 11:15 and starts talking about made this a big deal for free energy. Okay, the first thing you're going to have is everybody in the petroleum industry and everybody that's ox is being gored are going to be saying, we have proof that that was a Hollywood stunt. And I can't believe this president would stoop to those matters. Now, we are so used to this approach on anything that anybody says. In other words, we become far, far too cynical. And I'm willing to bet that a third of the population of the United States, if they in the world probably, if they watched an ET standing next to President Obama or President Bush or whomever it was, would say this is some sort of trick. Now, there's a difference between what I'm talking about and what I do, and that's being a professional doubter, in that I don't ever take a handout from anybody and take them at their word. Now, I don't believe people are lying as much as they're giving their truth to them and what happened to them. We see this in court trials all the time. People, eyewitnesses tell things that just didn't happen that way. And that's the human brain. So I believe not only CBS used to require two sources, I believe they need three or four. And none of these sources are going to know exactly everything, but it's your job not even to reach an opinion. Your job is to just throw it out there and maybe give your own opinion, but at the same time brand it as such. And so if disclosure happens, it'll probably not happen in the United States or any other sophisticated Western world. It might happen in Brazil or India.
Is that what you think would need to happen in order to kick things, get things going a little more in the UFO field?
I don't know.
What do you think?
I don't have an opinion about that, because I don't think there's any way you're going to get around the people who are devoutly religious accepting it. Even though I don't, as far as I've read the Bible, it doesn't eliminate. In fact, it kind of backs ancient astronaut theories. But I think we are a society that has been, and my fellow broadcasters are the ones that are mostly guilty of it, and that is that we've created a situation where nobody believes anything because we see too much.
Yeah.
And it always turns out to be wrong. And and there's a difference between being cynical and I'm questioning. Even your mother will lie to you if she thinks you're protecting you.
All right. So what?
Do I think there'll be a disclosure? I'm not sure.
Okay.
And not officially. But I think it's probably already here. About 70% of the people believe it's possible.
Yeah. All right. Why don't you give out your website again, Jerry?
JerryPippin.com, JerryPippin, P as in Paul, all in one word.
And your radio broadcast on Mondays?
Yeah, it's on Inception Radio from 7 to 9 Eastern. And we're on several other places, too.
And the link for that? Do you have that on?
Well, you find everything we ever do on the highlights window at jerrypippin.com on the homepage.
All right.
Hey, Jerry, it's been a real pleasure having you on the show tonight. We want to salute you for all your years of hard work in radio and trying to bring about as much information to the folks. And like I said, it's been
okay,
a
I've
real
enjoyed
pleasure
it. And one
here.
Final word about MUFON. I'm not pointing the finger at them. I think this is just what happens when you've been around 40 years.
Yeah, sure you're right.
Yep.
About that. We're having Clifford Cliff on next week, too. And so we'll have a chance to discuss some of that. And I'd like to thank our listeners as well for joining us on this live program, as well as those listening to the archive. And again, next week, Clifford Cliff, the International Director of MUFON, will be joining us. We'll have some discussion with him on 64 years of UFO research, not with MUFON, but with just the field in general, at least in most recent times.
And by the way, your organization does a great job.
Oh, hey, thanks, Jerry.
Coming from you, that's high compliment, so thank you, Jerry.
And we're trying to be different. And if you have not visited, and I'm talking about the audience now, if you haven't visited Paranexus.org, please do so. Love to have you join us. We're trying to make a difference in our own way. We'd love to have people come and be a part of that. So, again, folks, thanks so much. Hope you had a great 4th. Hope you have a great week. That's all I got, Grant.
Hey, thanks, everybody. And it's always lovely having you with us. And, Jerry, once again, it was a real pleasure. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah,
and happy birthday again.
Oh, thank you very much. It was a great, great conversation tonight. I loved every minute of it.
All right. Good night, everybody. Take care.
Yeah, bye-bye. I'll get some opinions sometime.